Part-time contractor. You should never ever touch a caulking gun. And that paint you put on the wall with a dollar store brush is full of runs. You're in Home Depot all day on Xbox all night. Knowing it's so wrong, but you're making bank, so I guess it's all right.
You just made that up right now?
Yes.
No, you did not, man.
I did.
Seriously?
So. I did.
I put you on the fly right there, man.
Yeah, you're like, I'm not a rapper, but yeah.
You were going through the 80s Rolodex there. Whitney, Mariah, Stevie.
Yes.
I was waiting for George.
Yeah, I made the big mistake in my mind, though, of thinking of Mariah and Whitney at the same time, because there is no contest.
No,
it's
of
Whitney.
Course not.
All the way.
Mariah is a one-hit wonder, in my opinion.
I mean, great voice and all that.
It's
but
a great
she's no Whitney.
Christmas song, and that's about it. And she just lives off those royalties, which is smart.
I like her, but Whitney.
Was an artist.
She rules the day,
yeah,
for sure.
Totally.
Yeah. Next time, I'll do Whitney.
It seems like
I will always love you, Manny.
Maybe that would be great. That maybe I think a lot of people are taking advantage of coming back on the show and they're more comfortable and being on the mic, and then they forget about the song. And I'm like, the admission fee is still there. I don't understand.
Exactly.
It's what the show has always been about.
Don't let him get away with it.
No, I try not to, but there's some that just refuse, and I'm like, okay, fine, it's your dime.
Yeah.
People are gonna be upset.
Make them audition at the door.
They're expecting for that intro of this show to be that song of some person either doing a great job like you just did or just killing it to extent
it did actually go okay.
You did great.
Yeah. Wonderful. I thought of the caulking gun thing and everything else happened.
Which is the part-time contractor.
Right?
Scott, welcome back, man.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
We were touching base, and all of a sudden, unfortunately, you got a slight injury. It's a good thing we're sitting down. We're not walking around doing this show.
I didn't think it was that far, but I'm heavy, and so I jumped off a scaffold.
It's got nothing to do with weight. It's just the way you
just
landed.
Am I landing?
You didn't have a superhero
do the big land, and I didn't roll. You know, I didn't do all of that James Bond stuff, but... But yeah, so it's been sore for a solid.
When did it happen?
It's been a month.
Oh, this is a while.
This has been a month,
and it won't go away.
Perfect. Not really. No, the doctor wants me to put an air cast on for a really long period of time, or stay off it for 3 weeks.
Which you can't.
Did he
offer drugs up?
I can't. What?
No drugs yet.
No, because it's not that it's not really that painful. Like it's just annoying.
What was the first thing you did when it happened?
The first thing I did, I'm like, oh, that hurts. And then I went to work. You know, adrenaline.
That's where I'm going with it.
Adrenaline, 100%.
I know, but.
When you hurt yourself at work, you do. You have that adrenaline pumping, especially when you're around scaffold and, you know, you're in the thick of it and there's a certain time crunch. We're working on the weekend. We almost always do interior residential repaint work, but. In this particular case, it was a connection, and there was a job that was really handed to us as an option, and so we did it, and it was more of a commercial thing. So,
and that was a month ago.
It was a month ago, so I don't know what I'm going to do. But
Wolverine hasn't healed yet.
I'm just hoping and praying. No, they are not made of adamantium. They are made of flesh and bone and whatever.
Brittle, older bone.
And the weirdest thing is that I feel like my other foot is having like sympathetic pain or something.
You
like,
feel pain in both now?
I feel like my other foot's not right either. But I don't know if it landed on both or if maybe one foot is just like sympathizing with the other.
I think I would like to see you maybe go to the carps or maybe you can pull this off yourself. I think you need to make a 2x4 crutch.
That would be something. Yeah, you know that would be something if I could find a part-time contractor. You know, pretty much anything you say to them, hey, could you make a full body cast out of 2x4s? We do that. Oh, yeah, we do that.
You know, hold on, let me get YouTube. Say yes.
Yeah, they always say.
They will say yes.
They always put a screen door in. Oh, yeah, $1,200. No problem.
I've got a few. I got a few extra pieces there. I could totally put it together.
Totally.
Do you want a wheelchair?
I'll say
put a wheelchair together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Sure.
Let me share the information. Scott Fitch is here. Fitch Painting at Fitch Painting. Fitch Painting on IG. You've got a website now.
www.fitchpainting.com.
Yeah. And then Scott at finchpainting.com. And then his phone number to reach him is 705-627-4453.
Correct.
That's it. That's my three. Shout out to Stephen Royce. I got three-way shirt on today. As you discovered, there's a bunch of shirts underneath the table that nobody ever sees unless you're in the studio.
I know. I'm always looking around.
But there's a reason why they're all there. So I like getting swag from guests that come in here, and then I wear it, and I legitimately wear it.
Probably. Nice.
So that's it.
You'll be getting mine.
Three-way. I'll get you, and then I'll wear it. Totally, man.
It's a little bit thin, though. So if you have light, certain light sources, it might be see-through a little
bit. There's no backlight in here. There's no black light in here. Yeah. It's all good. Nobody will see
it. And I don't make them in white or anything, it's fine, so it's good.
The white ones don't make any sense to me for contrast. Unless you're a painter.
Painters tend to wear white. Yeah. Our teams, we wear black. So it's my little change.
So is that like, is it become more challenging for the new guy? Because you don't want all the paint landing, all that Chantilly lace landing on black t-shirts.
Yeah, like they do tend to get messed up pretty fast from ceilings and stuff like that.
Chantilly lace going on a white shirt doesn't get noticed as easily.
Can we just not say Chantilly lace? It's like, okay, it's like Lord Voldemort.
Cloud white?
It should not be named.
Cloud white or something? No, you can't say
any white.
Any white.
It doesn't matter on the shirt, but just don't say that one.
How many whites are there in the world of whites?
Wow. There's
hundreds?
There's hundreds across all the different paint lines and colors. Sure. 100% there is.
But is it not like a white? So anybody who's listening, by the way, we're going to be talking about painting. Simple as that.
Might as well.
Is there not, whites are either cold blue or warm yellow. Is that not the white spectrum?
Yeah. I mean, I would agree with that they're either cool, warm, or neutral.
Yes.
Right? So the neutral ones would just be where a lot of people would look at it and say, I don't see warm or cool. I don't see gray. I don't see yellow. I just see white, right?
But and also it's a lighting thing too.
It's a lighting thing
natural too. Natural daylighting, also artificial lighting in your home. It affects the warm, cool, whatever.
All the stuff that's in your home, right? If you had this
bouncing off.
If you have dark wood, if you had black, you know, all that kind of stuff bouncing off different times of day, the lighting, all that. So yeah, if you... You know, some whites are can be very icy blue. They even have a little bit of content in them that make them that way.
What do you like? Do you like getting to the cooler bluish grays or do you like the warmer yellows tone? What do you like?
Yeah. Well, it depends what you mean by like. In other words, the way it looks or the way that it finishes out, you know, for good professional point. Use.
I would say, I guess, as a contractor, your first is to discuss how it performs, how it gets on the wall, how it works for you as a contractor, right? But I guess a close second would be how it feels when you finish seeing it.
Right.
That's how I look at it. I've always been a warm guy. I like warm tones in a home.
Yeah.
I totally like them.
Yeah, and I understand that. Again, for me, I like stock white. For me, I like plain white, just pure titanium dioxide, no presence of anything else. I like that for a lot of reasons. I like that because I can take ceiling paint, trim paint, well, I can take it from one house to another without having to worry about all this excess different kinds of colors of whites. I have Oxford white in my house. It has that warm component to it, but it's not going too far.
Yep.
It's not all the way over to cloud white, which
it's a little
cloud white is literally 50% of yellow. Downtown Toronto.
Yeah, it's yellow though.
Right?
It almost looks like old school yellow or white oil paint. That's what it looks like.
Correct. If it gets that.
After a season.
But it was like super, super popular, right? Almost every house on Avenue Road, every house in Rosedale was cloud white, like, and still a lot of it is, you know. So
how much do clients talk about the color of the walls and ceilings and trim after the house has been furnished? Because where I'm going with this is that you paint, you've done an amazing job, ceiling looks perfect, trim looks perfect, wall surface looks perfect, doors look perfect, and then all of a sudden it looks exactly how they envisioned that this quote-unquote white looks like.
Yeah.
But the moment you bring in your furnishings, it starts to change that white.
Yep.
So do they come back at you, Scott, and go, Scott, why does the white look different now? Mm. Does that conversation come up?
It doesn't, in my case... I have found a way to solve that problem for me personally.
Please share. Yeah.
So for me, it's really important for me to set people's expectations as to what the finish is going to be like and how we're going to protect their property and where the paint won't be and what it will look like where the trim meets the, you know, the cut-in meets the roller and all that stuff. And so when it comes to the color, though, I have a color consultant. So I have a color consultant that I send to all of my clients free of charge. Free.
Which basically it saves you a world of headaches.
It saves me a world of headaches because Stacy is the expert. She is going to set their expectations. She's going to know to ask those questions. Is this light fixture staying? Wow.
In this room, it is.
A balloon. Yeah. Is this light fixture staying or are you thinking of changing it out? She walks into an empty house. The first question she's going to ask is, let's have a look at your color palette. Let's have a look at your textiles. What are the pillows like? What kind of lighting are you going to have?
This is all important stuff.
All that kind of stuff that I don't have to deal with. So it's really, really valuable to me for me to have Stacy as that color consultant and her to process all of those things so that I can be the installer. Every painting company that does interior residential should do this. It's an incredible weight off my shoulders. She works on the colors. She works on the finishes. The only thing I talk to the person about is the durability level, is the, you know,
the application.
Are we going to buy good, better, best paint?
Yes.
But I get a complete report, and so does my customer, of the colors and where they go, the different sheens that we want. All of Stacy does all of that for me. And so that's Stacy from Simply Design in Barrie. And they're fantastic. And they've been a partner with me now for quite a while. Probably done, 50 color consultations for me. And I offer that as a service to my clients.
That's amazing. I like it. I want to ask you about good, better, or best. But before I ask you about that, you ever catch Stacy's mom come up on her phone display and you start kicking into the song?
And I keep thinking, man, she's got it going on.
For any young folks, you have no idea what we're talking about. REO Speedwagon.
It's not that old.
Was it that? Who sang it?
Oh, no. It's like.
Who sang it? Rick.
Help me.
Oh, yeah, no. It was Rick. Wasn't it Rick?
No. Who sang that song? Stacy's mom is like a pop punk band. Like.
Man. That's a terrible.
It's a terrible.
Who?
Fountains of Wayne.
What? Why was I thinking Rick's or Ariel? I don't
know. No, it's not that old.
Stacy's mom
has got it going on. Yeah.
Okay, never mind. So back to good, better, best.
Yes.
What makes a paint good, better, best?
So.
And why do paint companies offer good, better, best? Just purely money?
Purely money.
That's it.
In my opinion. It's pure retail at its finest. You offer a little bit of value and you charge a whole lot for that, right? Mm-hmm. So. When they're testing the durability of paint, we're talking about that, they'll have one paint that will survive 12,000 swipes with a robotic swiper.
Like they're rubbing something on it? Using what?
It's like a sponge, like a dense sponge, and it'll go over it back and forth and back and forth.
And how many?
So the paint, 12,000. So it'll survive the 12,000 swipes without ruining the paint. And then what they'll do is they'll have another paint that will survive 14,000 swipes. But for that paint, they'll charge you another $20 a gallon.
Okay, that's the better.
So that would be the better. And it's just kind of works that way. Is that, but that is, again, that's classic, that's just classic
marketing
retail.
Marketing 101.
That's classic retail. In each of those spectrums, is the most expensive paint better or more durable than the not maybe necessarily the contractor grade, but the what would be called the good, two lines down from it? It is, but is it really $40 a gallon?
I'm looking at the 12,000, 4,000, 14, or 12,000, 14,000 wipes. I don't even think in my lifetime I'm ever going to wipe a wall that many times.
This is a conversation I have when I set people's expectations, because will you ever get the value of that? Right?
Yeah.
If you have three kids and a mastiff and that's, you know,
different.
You like to wrestle, you know, you know what I mean? Like if you're playing
cook pasta,
if you're playing, exactly. If you're playing mini hockey sticks, you know, in the hallways and stuff like that, then yeah, maybe you want the most durable and the most ballistic paint.
I know, but I kind of go with the hardwood flooring argument where I remember my early days of construction, you had a lot of hardwood flooring people, salespeople tell me, you really want to go, here's the hardness scale. You really want to start talking about South American, Brazilian hardwoods, Jatoba, and on this hardness scale.
Right.
And I would look at them and go, it's a great sales pitch. You haven't sold me. Give me a fork. And I'll drop that fork on Jatoba and I'll drop it on pine and I'll still mar both of them the exact same way.
Right.
The Jatoba might be a fraction, maybe a millimeter less penetration than the pine, but you're still going to mar it. So when you're going good, better, best on the paint and you've got a kid with a hockey stick and he's got the end and he hits the wall, good, better, best, you're still leaving a mark.
Yeah. I mean, I've been literally asked, walked into a house where the kids had colored all over the walls with marker.
I love that.
Everywhere. And
Sharpie?
Multitudes of markers. I don't know if they were or not, but they're markers.
Was it a good design?
And the question came from the homeowner, is there a paint that will stand up to this? And I said, no, but it'd be great if they wouldn't continue writing on the walls. So, you know, like I'm not telling anybody, you know, what to,
Are you out of paper? What's going on here?
Do they
still make those bulletin board things? You know, the ones with the three rings, the big one, like 2 feet wide.
Yeah. Like a big flip chart.
Yeah. Flip chart. Do they still have paper?
An option. Yeah.
They don't have it even here. They have all digital stuff.
Yeah. I mean, we joked around a little bit about it because they said, well, you know, I can't seem to stop the kids from doing it. And I said, you could do whiteboard paint, right? You could make everything a whiteboard, which I've done in some commercial applications.
But do they clean as good? Do they always get back to the true white?
I wouldn't say they get back to 100% true.
They're always leaving some sort of hologram.
There can be some residue, especially with certain, like if you use red a lot and it's left on for a long time, if you wipe them off right away, got a good shot for longevity, but.
Same with the chalk paint, no?
Yeah, same thing. Just it needs maintenance, but it's a chalkboard. I mean,
I'd rather just get an old school chalkboard, try to find an old school that's got rid of them. Because I don't think there's chalkboards anymore in schools, are there?
I don't think so.
Are there whiteboards? Are there chalkboards? I don't know. I think they're whiteboards now.
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know if they have anything like that.
Could be like a whole OSHA thing.
Just a presentation. Maybe they put it on a computer and the computer shoots it up. I don't know.
Projection?
I don't
know. Could be.
Yeah.
I don't see it. But I mean, you got a bunch of chalkboards that you can reuse and...
They got to have them somewhere. Somewhere they got to be stockpiled somewhere.
It kind of makes sense. I mean, there was a trend, and that's where I want to go with. I'm trying to figure out through the decades, if you go as far back as, let's say, the 1920s, what was the white that was being used in each decade?
Because
I can only assume in the 80s would have been a cold white. I'm like, cold white would look best against glass block.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all pure 80s, right? And
yeah.
I think it wasn't until 70s and 60s has to be warm whites.
Yeah.
Has to be, right? So I'm just
trying to
figure
out the evolution
of whites.
You know, it's really been such a trend for the average person to care about interior design. I think that's the new trend, is because of HGTV and all of the information that people are gathering.
It's too much.
You've got people that are now, they're trying to apply all these design trends because it's readily available to places that I'm not sure that people care. I'm not sure that a lot of people cared about that. Or, I mean, I guess they could read magazines and stuff, but...
What's the trend that you're not digging these days? Like me, I'm done with live edge.
Yeah.
I don't care. I'm done with live edge.
Oh.
Like, I don't talk to me about a live edge desk, live edge table, live edge anything.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. It's firewood for me. I'm sorry to say, right?
Yeah. So for me, like, I'm done with shiplap. I'm just about done with shiplap personally.
Yep.
It's not fun to paint. It's because the edges are, they create this sort of like, these notches at the edges that you have to have a 5-year-old doing the caulking if you want to close that gap. Not fun, right? So I'm kind of done with hearing about, for me personally, hearing about shiplap, and I'm before it starts, I'm already done with painting companies and their color of the year. I
always see that in January.
I'm just done with it because they're always coming out with these colors that are, they're horrible to paint. And I don't know where they get the ideas for these, but I just roll my eyes every time. I think last year or year before it was like elephant. It was literally pink and was, I don't know where you'd put it except in a child's, I don't know.
It was a pink? It was actually.
It was called elephant tusk or something, right? So it's the whole thing. It's the whole thing of like having the color of the year for me.
And they were expecting that color to be what, in family rooms or dining rooms or?
It's just the color of the year. I don't know how they come up with it. I don't know if they figure it out. And I don't know if Benjamin Moore will let me on their cruise now because I said that, but oh well.
What am Benjamin I gonna do? Moore has a cruise?
Totally.
No.
They do.
Does Sherwin-Williams have a cruise? Deluxe?
No.
Fire on Ball?
No. As far as I know, I don't know. Really? In Barrie, it's hard to get Fire on Ball.
Benjamin Moore has a cruise.
They do. Yeah, Benjamin Moore has a cruise for painters and paint store owners. And
it's the first time hearing this, man. Yeah. And you've never been invited on one?
I was invited this year. Yeah.
So you are going on one.
So I am going on one. And now, I don't know if that's because Benjamin Moore has this program called Contractor Rewards. So when you buy paint and you submit it to them, it racks up points. I don't know if it's some flag was happened because of the volume or if just my paint rep, because I know him, did it. So Mike, my paint rep in up in Barrie, he's been Benjamin Moore like 30 years. So I've been talking to him about some projects and stuff. So I don't know if I was on the radar.
Where do they travel? Like, what are we talking about?
I think it's like a Muskoka thing. It's a Muskoka riverboat thing.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's not like it's not a tropical cruise or anything. It's like a riverboat cruise kind of thing.
If it's up in Muskoka, man, I'd probably sneak into the captain's cabin there and pull.
Let's go. I can probably
do
the
horn, man. I totally pulled the horn up there.
Yeah, yeah.
Piss all the neighbors off.
You could be my plus one.
And be like, yeah, I'm here for Benjamin Moore. And,
right?
They won't like that, huh?
Right? Bring scuba gear out and dive down in.
I didn't know. That's actually kind of clever because most people, I guess, because we've had such a beautiful summer, golf. Everything's been about golf.
Okay.
Right, like golf events and getting out there and all these networking things, which is great. It's wonderful for people who love golf or smoking cigars or drinking. You can do one of the three or two of the three, or you could do all three. I don't know in what order. But other than that, I've never heard of cruise, and I like the idea of doing a cruise.
Yeah, so it's just it's one of those kind of old school perks that Benjamin Moore, I think, has always done. Because when I used to work in the city of Toronto, I know the paint store managers, they talked about going every year. And I've never heard of a painter being invited to go.
Only interior designers?
I don't know. I won't know till I get there. I just know that it kind of happens. I mean, each company kind of has certain kinds of rewards. But yeah, Benjamin Moore has a really great contractor rewards program.
So you're on
their
radar.
I'm not sponsored necessarily by them. It's just my local paint store.
Product and they've been paying attention, which is great.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about why is there such friction? And I won't share this story, but why is there such a friction point between interior designers and contractors? And from what you described about Stacy, she has more interior designing education. Because color is monstrous, in my opinion, right? Mm-hmm. You can easily get it wrong, and it takes a lot of skill and effort to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of designers, in quotes for people who are not watching the show, that are basically furniture mover and light fixture purchasers. And that's not a designer, in my opinion. A designer is about color and textures and details and trim and tile. That's designing. That's all like elements of the home.
Yeah.
But why is there such a line drawn between, like, are we not allowed as contractors to have an opinion when it comes to this world? And when we do have an opinion, why are we shot down right away? Because we don't have a designer hat on. We have a contractor hat on.
I'm not sure why it happens. I think frequently you have designers that are A-type personalities and contractors that are A-type personalities. And sometimes both are very opinionated for one reason or other. And sometimes that that just doesn't necessarily work. Mm-hmm. It's like any other relationship is that, you know, my dad used to say, you know, Scott, you have two ears and one mouth. You should use them accordingly, right? Is that people don't listen to each other for the intention of understanding what you're saying. Yep. I'm just waiting for you to stop talking so I can get my point in.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot
kind of like this show.
So yeah, I think a lot of that happens when you have a designer who they're coming up with colors and finishes and everything. Now it depends on whether, like you said, they're going all the way through and doing the furniture and doing the complete job.
Yep.
But if they're doing a construction, a renovation design, so they're creating functional spaces with the design elements that's in them. Sometimes they have a certain style that they promote. And it's like their go-to style. They always have it that way. They always use a certain kind of white, which shall not be named. They do one thing, you know, that...
Because it's worked.
It's worked. It becomes kind of their signature thing. And they just kind of keep going to that. And they do that with cabinets. They'll do that with... they'll do that with countertop. They do that. I like a designer who has a little edge for psychology. So I like a designer who can learn about what a person is like and what a person needs, and then help them to paint that picture. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, on that basis, if there is something that's a crazy piece of construction work or something that I don't understand why there's necessarily friction between the contractor and this one. I think it's just a matter that they have to listen to each other. And I've met both that are just very, you know, I know everything, you know. And either of those people are gonna, you know, they're gonna have challenges. I've heard the same joke about both of those people. You know, how many designers or how many contractors does it take to screw in a light bulb, right? Well, it only takes one. They just hold the light bulb and the whole world revolves around them. Right? And so any person that's like that, that's trying to work in a collaborative environment, who isn't a team player and isn't a listener, they're going to have their challenges.
But I get the sense that contractors understand that construction is collaborative. Interior designers understand that parts of construction are collaborative. Mm. That's the difference.
And I think obviously they wouldn't necessarily, designer may not have necessarily the practice of having so many different people involved in the process that you have to be a kind of a team player. I've been very fortunate. The designers that I've run into, most of them have been great. Most of them have been the kind of people I think that would be collaborative to help the customer achieve their end result. The ones that I have met that maybe fit into that category, I definitely remember them.
You remember the experience. But they're few and far in between. You learn the kind of thing. But I get the sense from what I gather from knowing so many contractors, mm-hmm. and not knowing so many interior designers, right? Mm-hmm. But I just get the sense that interior designers, once they find out they've created a certain kind of mousetrap, they keep on reverting back to that mousetrap. And in my opinion, when they do that, they're phoning in the skills. And yep. I don't know that many contractors that just phone in the skills on every single job. They take the pride and effort to go on that job. They're presenting themselves as a brand. Mm. They're trying to provide for the client. They want to achieve what the client's looking to achieve. And so phoning it in is last on the list. And unfortunately with designers, once they find a good mousetrap and they've got a good model on what colors to use and what textures and what fabrics and all this other stuff, they just phone it in and keep on replenishing that. And I don't like seeing that. I like to see changes. I like to see comfort. And that's why we gravitate towards seeing these beautiful projects that have nothing to do with what the industry is doing as a whole. Mm-hmm. And I go back to, and everyone's joked with me several times about it, Shaker kitchen panels. Like, it's just... I don't get it. I don't understand it. I'm in awe when I see, European, Japanese style kitchens. Mm-hmm. I'm in awe of certain things. Yeah. And none of them ever have shaker, white, or whatever it is. They don't have. But the industry has a list of, this is what we have to do. You're doing a kitchen, brand new kitchen? All right, we're going to do a shaker panel kitchen to start off with. We're going to do quartz. We're going to do this color on the ceiling. We're going to do this color on the wall. This is what it's going to be. And we're going to paint the cabinets maybe this color. We're going to go that CL. It's kind of funny, eh? Chantel,
yeah,
it's cloud. It's the same CL.
Yeah. I think the difficulty is that, and I don't know if that's because it always seems to start... When you're talking about pricing for a project, you always kind of start with the basics. And that's a lot of times the design, original design comes in with those basics. As a painter, it's always been funny to me to wait for the color package and wait for the color package.
What's taking so long?
And then the color package comes in and the whole thing is tone on tone on tone, the white that shall not be named. The whole thing. Ceiling, walls, and trim.
Are we doing the latest trend?
Somebody got paid. Yeah, so I'm saying, that's happened.
They phoned it in.
That's happened 10 times.
Here's the book. This is what each room is going to be, and it's the same thing.
It's like, you don't need to pay me. I just do everything white.
Are they going crazy now? Because I'm seeing a trend of
I don't know.
We're doing different sheens now. It's still Chantilly lace, but we're going to do.
You said it.
Sorry. We're going to do flat on the ceiling. We're going to do eggshell on the walls. We're going to do satin on the trim.
Yeah. I mean, not as common as it once was.
It was big?
100%.
The difference in sheens?
Difference in sheens. Sure. 100%. It's not as common as it was. White on white on white on white. You've got more, grays that are happening now. Lots and lots of light gray. But it's not as popular. The other thing too is that, to be honest, I'm in Barrie, right? And I'm in Barrie, and we don't really do new construction painting. We don't do renovation painting that much. And we pretty much do residential repaint work. So when you're doing that, you're frequently working with what we have existing. You're not really getting into... We just don't get into doing a lot of those higher end properties. We're doing mainly those repaint jobs for people over 50 that don't want to do it themselves. That's really our market.
What's the people under 50? What are they? They're going with all the Toronto trends. They're going with what? Even if they're in a house like that, are they still trying to do the trend colors?
I would just say in Barrie that no. I would say in Barrie they still need help with the color package. And so they're still working with, my color consultant to figure that out. And so they don't come in with this, I want this, I want that, I know 100%. Hardly anybody that we work with anyway is in that category. Over 50% of my clients will use my color consultant because even making a decision about the painting is a barrier because they don't even know.
They're too nervous.
They don't want to invest in that color. They need help, right? They need somebody. And then Stacy's job, a great color consultant's job, again, is to read the person and kind of find out what it is that they want and then give it to them, not to come in and say, well, you should do this and you should do it. Because if you do that, they'll hang you by, So I've been down that road too, where all I did is randomly suggest a color. And then, the interpretation after was, you chose that color. Well, I just suggested.
Let's just replay the meeting here.
Yeah. Let's just replay what actually happened.
Scott, am I fair to say that we should maybe pay attention to children and their selection of colors sometimes? As extreme as they might be? Because I can only assume, I'm not a parent, but I can only assume that children choosing the color that they want their room to be is a reflection of who they are. Mm. So they'll go a little different and they'll I really like that. I want that in my wall, right? Right. So, but the parents might be reluctant about that. Mm-hmm. But should we be listening to the children sometimes about their color selections?
I guess it depends on what age you're talking about. For me, my thing was I'll do an accent wall, but I'm a painter, right? So I would give the kids a color if they wanted it, I suppose.
I guess age-wise, but there's anything above 10.
But there's nothing. Yeah, there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. You just have to understand from a practical point of view that it's going to change in 3 years, right? It's going to change from a kid who's 10. When they're 13, they're going to feel differently. Yep. If they stay in that room for some reason until they're 17, they're going to feel differently.
Yep.
Right? So you could go from light blue to Minecraft green to black.
Minecraft green?
What, yeah, Minecraft, like it's a video game. It's a... Yeah, Minecraft is like a very, very popular video game.
So what kind of green is it?
And it's like a lime, it's like that pencil there, like a lime green.
Oh, this pencil.
Yes. Like a lime green. You can't. Yeah.
Okay.
You'd have to hold it up, I guess.
No, no, I got it. It's right here. Like, you're talking about this?
Yeah. Yeah. Minecraft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that green.
Yeah. My granddaughter wants to play it, but you have to actually be able to read, because in the game you have to actually be able to read things.
But she's not even one. Is she one?
No, no, no.
No.
Oh, no. That... You saw maybe a recent picture. Okay, but that was my youngest grandchild.
Oh, okay.
My oldest grandchild is six.
Six.
Yes.
So she wants.
And I have four.
Four grandchildren.
I do.
And you're younger than me.
Yes, I'm 52.
No, I'm 52. When are you turning 53? Have you turned?
Not till July next year.
Oh, next year. Yeah. So I am younger than you.
Or you are younger than me.
I'm older than you. Sorry.
Or you're older than me.
I'm 53 this year.
Really?
Yeah. And you got five grandchildren?
Four.
Four.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing.
What color do they want their rooms?
Amazing.
You got the green.
For Annabelle, even who's six, like it's just kind of not on her radar. She shares a room with her sister. Yeah, she just, maybe she'll have that feeling at some point. But
I think it's 10. I think at age 10 they'll start.
Maybe
this is my color.
If they have their own room, like I always shared a room with my brother, so I would have never thought to have asked.
Wouldn't it be cool?
Never thought. It would be very bold for somebody to ask, I feel like, in the 80s, to ask your parent.
No, no, no,
like,
that was never asked. No, this is it. Get in like, there.
You don't even ask for a sandwich.
Yeah. But nowadays, wouldn't it be cool, though? I'm just going to throw this out to Benjamin Moore. Maybe if I was on the cruise, I could probably come up with a few ideas to throw at you guys. But as well, I would do a color selection just for kids' rooms.
Sure.
But no names on them.
Mm.
So when the kid chooses the color and you tint it, the color of that paint is the kid's name.
Oh, you get to name a color. Wow.
Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be cool.
I don't know how you would pull that
name
off.
Name your own color.
Name your own color in satin.
That would be really
flat. Right? And you have like, it was Annabelle? No, Annabelle.
Annabelle.
Annabelle. So Annabelle Green or something like that, right?
Exactly.
Annabelle, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think there's something there for Benjamin Moore to do it. I want some royalties.
You got more ideas than you can roll out, buddy.
I'm just saying that'd be kind of cool if I was a kid today, because we're being, I guess the kids of today they get away with a bunch of stuff compared to what we were talking about. Get in there, be lucky you're not on the stairs, right?
Yeah, they do, but in some ways, obviously, some people glorify the 80s. They talk about how great the 80s. Well, the 80s were really dangerous.
Yeah.
The 80s were a dangerous time to be a kid.
Yeah.
And, a lot of us, some of us thrived, but a lot of us didn't survive. Some of us died, right? Because of the way things were then. So there's a lot of talk about sort of the good old days. And I love Gen X talk. I have a TikTok account. From COVID, I did lots of Gen X content, but there's a lot of things that I'm grateful for now. And when I go to people's homes, when I do quotes, I see a lot of dads that are really involved in their kids' lives, and that wasn't a thing. I loved my dad and everything, but it wasn't that kind of really close thing. My dad never helped me with my homework, any of that kind of stuff, right? I see that happening, so I'm actually very hopeful about the future for the children that are alive right now. I really am. I think they have a great shot at a great life.
I was having a conversation with somebody. I'm trying to remember, but I'm getting too old to remember some things. So this will be a nice library when I look back and I watch these things and see what I said. But we were talking about, were we born in the right decade? So I was born in 71, but obviously I was raised in the 80s. I'm an 80s guy, right? So I'm heavily influenced by the 80s.
Yes.
And you're 100% right. It was a weird, dangerous time But I also think that it was a very creative decade as well, too. Mm-hmm. And then him and I, we got talking about it. I'm thinking for some reason it's Steve from Groove that I was chatting this. And I was like going, was I born in the right? And I was like thinking, I think I was two generations too late. Mm. I think I would have been a better Manny version in the 60s or 70s.
Interesting.
If I was born in the 50s and then raised in the 60s, or born in the 60s and raised in the 70s, I think I would have been a more interesting Manny. Not that I'm not interesting today, but it's just I longer hair, shaggy. I think I would have been a part of that whole peace, love, kind of anti-war kind of thing. I would have been totally against, like, for that. Mm-hmm. 80s, like, we didn't really, it was the fall of the wall. It was that kind of stuff, right? But I wasn't political enough to be a part of that stuff, right? Now you are today. So I don't know. I just, I put the question out there. Was I born in the right decade? Who I am? And I don't know if people have these conversations.
I don't know. That's
new, older people do.
I mean, that's definitely a new one for me. I embrace a lot of the things about my childhood that were probably not wise and everything, but they became great experiences that I survived. Right. So the fact that I didn't have to be home until sort of the streetlights came on, or an hour after that, even from a very young age.
Bicycle helmets, doing this dumbest thing.
Oh yeah.
Jumping off ramps.
Setting up every kind of ramp possible and jumping that thing with a 10 speed or a green machine.
This flexible
or,
quarter inch. Is this good enough for a ramp? Yeah, this is good enough for
like
a ramp. Yeah,
whatever was kind of like lying around, you know, sleeping over at friends' houses, and my parents didn't know who they were. And I mean, all of that kind of stuff was just fraught with danger. At the same time, those are really fun moments, right? That was really fun, you know, doing those jumps and flying through the air, or seeing how high you could go flying off of a swing set, right? But
until you land and you have a bone protruding somewhere.
Right? I did one of those, and I actually cut myself underneath my arm. It was like, you know, so just all of those.
I've had the collarbone stick out.
All of those things. I mean, I can't even tell me. I used to go to the local swimming pool like by myself all the time, or with my friends at 8 years old, you know, and just, it was just, it was just a different time. I can
see the milk carton already, man. Like, holy cow.
Yeah, yeah. So it could have, and a lot of people didn't. That's the story you don't hear necessarily, is that a lot of people didn't survive it. A lot of people didn't come out, didn't come out of it, victorious. They came out of it with a lot of challenges and a lot of bruises and a lot of hurts and a lot of stuff that is really, really hard.
Wasn't the 80s all about the color almond, like a really yellowy beige kind of tone? That's what I remember for some reason.
Yeah, it definitely was like
that. And wallpaper.
Yeah,
and some of the worst wallpaper in history.
Wallpaper was huge. My dad was a wallpaper guy. So I used to cut and book paper for my dad all the time, and he would do small houses and powder rooms and accent wall. He would do that stuff.
Any of the wallpaper, but he would also fruit on it?
He would do commercials. What's the party?
Fruit?
Fruit?
On the wallpaper.
Not that I remember, little but he did do, which is coming back now, but he did do the grass cloth. You know, it's like,
I know, it's grass like cloth.
Pieces of grass.
Yeah, I know. That's big now.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I
saw a condo one time in Toronto in Bedford, right across from U of T Stadium. And the whole thing was grass cloth. In the closets, everywhere.
That's too much.
And mirrors. So the grass cloth would terminate and then the mirror would start. And it was total, like, it was Elvis. It was really old. And the people wanted us to paint the grass cloth. I'm like,
can you do that? Well,
it's one of those things. Can you?
Or should you?
Should you? How do you? You'd have to spray it. You'd have to tape everything off.
Will it not curl or?
I don't know. But of course, the whole building is made of, you know, plaster, right? So if it's all concrete and plaster. So if you try to take it off.
Oh, you're going to
pull the wall it's a scene, right? So we didn't get the job. Because it was a lot of money, because we said we would paint it, but you know, they were just trying to get, but that was,
they wanted to get an idea of what it would cost.
I think there are still, it'd be surprising, but I think there are still tons of houses in the city that are still decorated from the 70s.
Oh, there's totally.
Tons.
Totally. They don't want to change it. There's nothing wrong with it. It's been upkept. It's all good. Don't worry.
There's
but you're stuck in a time.
There is definitely tons of them. And I think it's just so much fun. Of course, I've been to Graceland. I've been to Elvis's house. If you've never been,
I've never been.
It's a fun trip. If you like that kind of thing, like if you like kind of raw and real history, you know, even Elvis's house, it's actually not that fancy a house. It's, you know, it's a three bedroom bungalow. Yeah, like it has
it's
a
all
thick,
carpet.
Yeah, shag carpet.
Shag carpet.
And too. The basement is that whole like jungle room thing. And but
would there still be
still lots?
Elvis's DNA in that carpet? Airborne dust?
Sure.
Or would it have been shampooed clean or something? I don't know.
I'm sure there's places they haven't got to where, you know, there's
like when I see carpet,
there's remnants
DNA
of it.
Dust or something in the carpet, especially shag carpet.
So carpet is evil to you?
I'm a runner guy. I love runners.
Oh, okay,
specific
okay.
kind of runners. I okay. do. I do like rugs.
Yeah.
Specific kind okay. of rugs. I'm not a big shag rug, especially if you have dogs.
Okay.
That shag rug's dead in months.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I do like carpet, but it has to be done well. Same mm-hmm. thing with the hardwood flooring, right?
Yeah.
But because it's nothing's worse in Canada, cold winter, even though the house is warm.
Yeah.
You get out of bed and you step on hardwood.
I know.
You want to step on some sort of plush kind of carpet rug thing.
I have two rooms in my house that still have fairly high pile shag carpet. And I love it. I love the way it feels.
It's comfy.
It's super comfy. And like in times when I haven't, you know, I did any workouts at home or if I did any exercising at home, I just used that. I didn't have to put a mat down or anything. And I just loved it.
You know, what I don't understand is that the Brits love putting carpet in their bathrooms.
Oh yeah.
I don't understand that.
I guess I don't understand from a practical point of view, but
I don't know any man who's got like 100% sniper aim that you're not going to have any drops.
No, brother, so, your aim is not that good.
So the shag carpet that's in the bathroom has some DNA there. I don't like there's something.
And
there.
You got to lift that seat because your aim is not as good as you think it is. No matter what you think.
So carpet in the bathroom, I don't understand. But that's a British thing, old British thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's new, but I doubt it.
And I didn't know it was a British thing. But every once in a while I still see it. And again, getting out of the shower, you know, with bare feet, like I can sort of see it, but not practically, especially from that era when there's hairspray flying everywhere and, you know, toothpaste. I mean,
Scott, let's talk about your competition, because I guess it's fast approaching where you're getting a big segment of the population. They're looking at wall treatments. And I want to talk about, like, you're getting, you know, plastering, Venetian surfaces, mm-hmm. you're getting wood treatments, you're getting like stuff like this, mm-hmm. you're getting, I don't know, brick patterns, like you're not painting drywall surfaces anymore. You're getting a lot of clients that are like, we want to do a wall treatment of some sort.
Yeah.
Which only gets you involved if they want to paint that wall treatment. Yep. But for the most part, you're choosing a wall treatment for the sake of using that particular texture.
Sure.
And I'm seeing a huge uprise in the concrete finishing wall treatments mm-hmm. where you're getting so many people creating the look of architectural concrete mm-hmm. in condos in your home, in your mm-hmm. living, dining room, family room, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. How do you navigate those waters when you got these clients going, no, we're going to do a wall treatment here. It's going to be concrete. It's going to be brick. It's going to be sand. It's not going to be paint.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with it?
I think I'm uniquely equipped to deal with those situations. The reason is that I really believe in this idea of, I call it co-petition. So it's not competition and it's not cooperation 100%, but it's sort of both. In other words, it's this whole idea of collaboration versus competition. So in my neck of the woods, we focus on doing one thing really, really well, interior residential repaint work, preferably for people between 45 and 50 and 65. But we focus on that. But everybody else that I know is good at their trade or another segment of the painting business, or in doing special finishes, or in doing special accents, or when somebody calls me, that becomes a lead for them. So I refer those people right away, without hesitation. Without hesitation, right away, if somebody wants exterior work done, I'll give them Nathan's number from Essa Painting, or I'll give them Sam's number from Springwater Painting. If they want wallpaper done, I'll refer them to John Gavin. I've built relationships with these people, and I truly, truly want to help them promote and build their business. If they need a larger crew, or if I can't do something, I'm going to call Bev from Fresh Look Painting in Barrie. I'm going to call Chris from Wags Painting, because I have a relationship with them, and I really do want to see their businesses succeed, because I don't want the amateur people to succeed. I don't want the people that are just trying to do those things in a hack way.
Yeah.
Right. So Stacy, for example, my designer, she's in a business networking group with Bev from Fresh Look Painting, and her company does renovations. Well, I don't paint for Stacy. Bev paints for Stacy. Mm-hmm. They had an existing relationship, but she's my designer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a business coach recently. He said, well, why doesn't she send you all her business? I said, well, I've never asked. She does a great piece of work for me. She helps me with what I need. She enjoys it when she gets to go out and when she does these color consultations. I said, at that point, our transaction's complete and I'm happy. She has an existing painter for her renovation work. Now, if she's on one of my projects and she recommends some applied molding, or she recommends some of the stuff that needs to be painted, she would have me do that. So I love learning about people. We don't do staining of stairs. You recommend
somebody.
But I recommend somebody. So
Never look at them as competition.
I don't look
at... And you're probably always meeting somebody new.
Yeah.
That has the value that is in line with what you do. So then you can confidently share that person's contact to this client.
100%. So I don't look at them as competition at all. And that is partially because I have a very, very specific niche. I drive marketing people crazy because I have a very, very specific niche. But I feel like if we're not now, we're definitely going to be the very, very best and be the very best person to call when you'd want high-end, white glove, VIP, residential repaint service. We're the people to call for that. But if you are looking for something else, we're still the people to call because I have friends.
Yeah.
And I have friends that I truly, and people are shocked. And it builds trust, because where I'm not cagey about recommending somebody else, or if we're too busy, I'm not cagey.
It's not a threat. It's not a threat to your business.
I don't find it. It's not a threat at all. And again, when you work in a town, it's 180,000 people in Barrie, but it still operates like very much like a small town.
Yeah.
Is that the person that I talk to on the phone, many times they've seen my face all over town. They've seen my face in a Facebook ad. I want them to associate me with trust. I don't always get it right. So it drives me crazy that I know there's some people that I could have done better with when I was working with them. But most people, no matter what the interaction is, I want them associated with trust. And this is what I teach my people too, is that you want to have that rapport wherever you go, whenever you interact with people, when you're at the paint store, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
When you treat people with value and you know where to invest your energy and invest your referrals and all of that stuff, then everybody's business gets elevated and we all will all have lots of work. There's no shortage
of work.
That there's a lot of people that tried to start a business during COVID, especially. There's a lot of people that tried to start a business with maybe only doing, they did flooring in their house. Well, now they do flooring. They did some painting. So now they're going to try and do painting. Or they try to be a jack of all trades. They want to be a handy person.
They realize real quick though.
And so those people, I don't want them doing any painting. I want them to do something else. I don't want them doing painting. I want the businesses in our town. I want them to do well, and I'll do everything in my power to help them do well.
Who's your, or actually, you ever ask a client why they didn't go with you if they didn't go with you? You ever have that conversation? Because I know most of the time we'll ask why you went with me because we're working together. I'm on site, you're on site, we're talking. So I always pick their brain and go, why did you go with me, right? And there was a level of comfort, there was trust, there was all those kinds of things. But you never really get an opportunity to ask why you didn't work with me. Mm-hmm. But that's valuable information. If you could try to figure out how to get that information, I just don't know how you would get it. Because when they say no, you're not a part of the picture anymore, right?
Yeah, over 25 years of doing this, if I'm talking to somebody who's in my target market with a project that's in my target market, the only reasons would be the price or timeline, right? That they need somebody right now and I'm just not available right now.
You don't schedule like that.
I don't have people just sitting on the bench, right? I have painters calling me all the time, almost as many people as customers. Painters call me all the time. Oh, you know, hey, if you ever get too busy, I'll come and help you out. Well, I'm not looking for a one-night stand. I'm looking for people that...
Are they trying to fill in the fourth or fifth day of the week, or are they just trying to get...
I don't really know. I'm just... It's a very common thing, though. It's not their fault. It's just a very common thing for people to say, oh, you know, hey, if you ever need a... You know, I could sub off you. Well, no. That's not what I'm looking for. No. So I don't have just people I can call up who can come and do the job representing Fitch Painting. I don't have those people. If you need somebody else because of the timeline and it still fits your budget, then I can probably refer you to another professional company in town and their pricing is going to be maybe similar to mine, maybe not. I don't know. Because every job is quoted custom.
Yep.
Right? So in my experience, it's hardly ever been anything else.
Just those two things.
It's really just those two things. Because I'm
for sure.
Because I provide a lot of value. Nobody's going to beat us on value. Nobody's going to beat us on the way that the quote is done. In my opinion, I think, you know, I think we're fantastic at that. And nobody's going to beat us as far as what we really, really try to do in a person's home, which goes against a lot of what I was told to do when I was an employee, right? One coat, get it done as fast as you can, you know, like don't put paper down, just throw a drop sheet down, you know, like as fast as possible. Speed is everything. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of the antithesis of that, where we don't think that way necessarily. We find places for efficiencies, but we don't comp, there's certain non-negotiables. So I tell people that painting is not like building a hamburger at McDonald's, where I can give you the manual and tomorrow you can start making hamburgers. It's not the same where I micromanage the painters as far as how they do the work, but I have non-negotiables, right? The meat has to be cooked, the condiments have to be cold, and the bun has to be fresh and squishy, right? So in my world, you know, in my world, property has to be protected. The repairs and everything have to be done really, really well. And everything gets two coats, always. Same color on the same color always gets two coats. So those are my non-negotiables.
It ain't a drive-by and just touching patches and then doing this one
coat. No, we're thoroughly paranoid. Yeah. You know, we're trying to be thoroughly paranoid. And so we provide a lot of value. So it's usually, it's just price. It's timeline.
I can see that. I don't even think the personality comes into it.
I think about once a year, somebody tells me that I'm too pushy as a salesperson. About once a year. somebody says I'm high pressure.
In what point? Like to the point that you're saying that it should be done this way? Like this is the quality that's
associated? No, the customer didn't go with us because they felt like I was...
A pushy salesperson.
I was a pushy salesperson. Yeah, because in every... Because I do the quotes on site. So if I come to your house, I'm going to give you a handwritten quote right on site right away. And I'm going to ask you... You know, so here's how much it costs. Here's all the things that we're going to do. We're going to send you a color consultant free of charge. We're going to protect your property. We're going to do the repairs really awesome. We're going to put two coats on everything. Then I'm going to have my professional cleaner come in and clean all the places that we've painted from top to bottom. And this is how much it's going to cost. What do you think? That's my big close. That's my big high pressure thing. So once a year or so, somebody will say, you know, we didn't go with you because we felt like you're trying to get us to, or, you know, you asked that my spouse and I both be together in the same meeting. And we didn't like that. You wanted to ask about have the decision makers together.
Because I don't want to paint two rooms in the same spot.
Yeah. And so what happens, the thing that people don't understand, it's hard to explain when you're in first conversations because people are suspicious. They're so suspicious. They don't even want to give you their last name sometimes. They're just suspicious when you're first having a conversation with them and you're trying to set up a quote with them, you know? For some reason, they've got their guard up, right? And so when you say, you know, is there anybody else that would be kind of contributing to the decision? Anybody else, you know, that you live with that would
be... Just being courteous.
Yeah, you know, because I'd like them to be there. Well, why do they need to be there? Well, they need... And the big explanation is this, that if you don't have both interested parties or all interested parties there when you do the quote, if you don't, customer satisfaction goes way down. Because if I do the quote with you, and then when I show up to paint the house, you're working, but your spouse is there.
Yeah.
You'll put the paint on the wall. We'll put the paint on the wall. Even after you've chosen the colors with Stacy, and they're going to say, "Oh, that's the wrong color. That's not what I want."
That's you.
Right? And their opinion is just as valid, but they weren't there when you did the quote. But
then it brings up a possibility of a discussion later on.
Yeah.
Because I should have been there, but I couldn't be there because I was doing something else.
Yeah. So that's why I try to, when I book the appointment, I try to say something like that, you know, let's work on the schedule so that we can get both of you there or all interested parties, or maybe it's a parent. Maybe we've got parents that live with their children also that are contributing to to the paint job, all interested parties, so that everybody can be there when we do the quote, so that at least we are in agreement as to we are painting this closet, but we're not painting that closet. You know, we are painting just this one side of the garage door, but not both sides of the garage door. All of those little nuances, you want to have everybody there. It's not so you can put a big pressure, high pressure sales tactic on them. No. But if they are going to make a decision to move forward and they're going to do it in that meeting, it's better that they do it together than you saying to your spouse, "Oh yeah, the painter came by. He said it's $5,000. I said, yes. You know,
why didn't we discuss this? Why didn't we? Yeah, I know.
Right.
I get it.
And so
see a car crash.
So it is better for you to be sitting at the table to look at each other. And when I do the quote, I usually go out to my car and do it. So that usually gives the interested parties a chance to kind of to talk about at least what they feel about this person. Right. So the way I look at it is, I think every home service person, if they can put a quote together, it's a great thing to be able to present it while you're on site and ask for a decision. I think that that's wise, and I think it's great, and you should do that. Every once in a while, that's going to be misinterpreted a little bit, and if it does, it probably means you're doing a good job, you know, as a salesperson.
Who's your youngest employee?
My youngest employee is Anna.
And
she's 20.
How did she find you, or you found her?
Well, she actually works with Jesse. So usually most of my teams I try to set up my team so that I've got sort of an A painter. If you have an A, B, C. So an A painter would have 5+ years experience. A B painter would be in that sort of like 1 year to 3 year zone. And then you'd have a C who would be somebody who's brand new and learning, right? In a perfect world, we would have an A, B, and C painter on each team, but at very least A and C or A and B. So you've got somebody who's very seasoned, who like can do that. Fantastic repairs.
Yeah.
But if we don't train the next generation.
Yeah, that's why I like this. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think if I was growing my team and I was looking for prospects, I would probably use a lot of warm market things. I would check out the gym, right? You've got people that, they work hard. They have a certain
amount. There's discipline amount of, there.
There's some discipline
yep.
there, that might be a place for me to start. But if we don't train, the next generation, we all going to be old,
And that's where I was going with this is like, have you thought about your exit plan or passing on the business?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. I mean,
it must have come up in conversation.
Well, sure. I have ideas about how I can empower my teams to be more of a self-sufficient profit center and then possibly be able to create a franchise out of that. But my idea, and I'll just release it, so that's fine. We'll put it out there. But, my idea is to try and help sort of the smaller painter to be able to stay small, 3 or 4 painters, build a small business, have Fitch Painting help them with sales and marketing and training, but help them to have a piece of business that they can feed their family with and enjoy and have a good life, just small. So I have ideas about how I can do that, down the road, how I can make that investment or my legacy, I suppose, in the painting business. Which is empowering people, but not necessarily meaning you have to scale to 4 crews or 5 crews or something like that, right?
Is that what's going on in the painting industry? Is that adding crews means success?
I think it's happening in the whole construction.
So you keep business. On adding bodies just to make yourself look like you're bigger and you've got more work and you got more clients, you got more everything, but are we just like, feeding into ego, just saying we're presenting that we're bigger?
Yeah. Well, I think the thing is that there's just a lot of pressure. And I think we talked about this the last time. There's always this pressure that you're not doing enough.
Mm.
Right? Even Ed Milet has a book out called The Power of One More. And I kind of understand that a little bit. But maybe an undertone of that could be interpreted of, like, no matter what you're doing, you should be doing more. No matter what you're doing, it's not enough. It's not good enough. Make one more phone call. Make one more sales call. Work. Get up an hour earlier. Well, I'm already getting up at 4 o'clock. Get up an hour earlier. There's this constant push. And if you investigate any kind of sales training or anything, and you do that on your computer, your Facebook feed will get full of all of these people, these business opportunities. How you can, does your construction business pass the fly fishing test? Can you go away for a week? This company will mentor you to, have an independently running crew, right? They'll coach you to do that, right? And your coach is 22 years old. There's this constant pressure that it's not enough. And we already have a whole generation that is anxious and is afraid of expectations. And so there's this sort of warrior mentality of you grind it out, hustle hard and all that stuff. And that's
always been in construction, Scott. Has that not always been in construction?
Yeah, I think I'm talking about from a business owner's point of view, though, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm just saying there's a pressure to get off the tools. And, if you're not doing that, if you're not getting off the tools, then, that there's some kind of judgment on in that regard, right? And so
It's like you failed because you have to still stay on the
You're
tools.
Not successful. If you're in the trades and...
And you're still in the tools and you got gray hair.
Well, it's not about even having gray hair. It's just that every... You know, like I recently had a lunch with a guy who's starting a landscaping company in town. He's a 21-year-old guy. And he started referencing all of these big name marketing and sales guys. And I could see the pressure. He's 21 and he's feeling like he needs to be like a Grant Cardone. He needs to be like, that he needs to be like Tony Robbins. He's like, I really need to develop a personal brand.
I think you need to develop your personality.
So I'm just saying, I think that pressure will create a few superstars, but I don't wonder if it'll do some damage along the way. So my idea is more back to, I think, what we had talked about before, about my son Daniel asking me, Dad, what kind of life do you want to have? Mm. And so I interviewed somebody recently, and that was the question I asked them. You have two kids. What kind of life do you want? Like 5 years from now, what would you like your week to actually look like? And, if Fitch Painting can be a part of helping you to get there, then I want to. If we can't, then I want to be real honest with you about that. But we have to, this trade business, we do have to invest in the next generation, and we have to find a way for them to be a part of it and to enjoy it, because being in the trades is great. It's a great life. There's good money in it. You're usually home by 6 o'clock and you don't have to check your emails.
Mostly time.
You know what I mean? Like it's a pretty good life, and again, as a business owner, it's definitely challenging, working with customers and all of that. But in general, I love to see more young people getting their tickets and, getting that trade, those trade experiences.
Do you think the young trades that are getting in right now, they're in it for the long game? Because I don't think so.
I don't know. I have the same suspicions you do. I think it's one of those things where I think a lot of people are approaching a lot of things that they're doing right now is like, it's good for now, but there's something more.
I think they're also being bombarded. It's great that you brought up the whole, there's a lot of pressures on social media and the construction industry, I think right now, and I'll say is being abused by a lot of people that are getting into it that have come up with systems mm-hmm. that are very creatively sold and marketed in a position that you can do a lot better than you're doing right now by just doing these things and being a part of this system that I've created, right? Yeah. And we see this all the time. Yeah. And I saw it recently where I was like, okay, so you've got a lot of, and I'll call them, for lack of a better word, monkeys that have seen the pool of contractors in the industry as a revenue stream. Mm-hmm. That's all it is, right?
Totally.
So, I mean, we know how many contractors are across Canada in different levels of construction.
Sure.
We know it across US and we have a sense of what it is globally. And we are a viable industry now, but you're selling a bunch of goods that may not necessarily be right for your business. So I think what's happening is that you're getting this younger generation coming in, tin men, I call them tin men from the 60s and 70s, where that's the reason why you saw a lot of houses with aluminum siding. They were very good at selling mm-hmm. this crappy product that basically
wood foundations.
Yeah. Like it just cladded America, cladded Canada.
Yeah.
And they were really good at what they were doing, but it's not benefiting the industry. So when I see these young guys come in here and girls, and they're like, I can sell you this and this is going to be better for you. They ain't going to be around 10 years from now selling that same product. They're going to try to get their numbers in place and then they're going to move on to another industry that works in the same way.
Obviously this is pulling out a whole bunch of things that I feel about, I do want to be a resource for other people that are trying to start in business and trying to be in the painting business and all of that. But I'm very disillusioned with all of these coaches that are out there, because the truth of the matter is there's even now, whether it's construction or painting or selling on Amazon or doing any one of those things, there's more money in showing somebody how to make money than there is in actually making money doing the thing.
100%.
There's a lot more money in it. And there's a lot less responsibility. Because if you coach somebody to do something and you charge them $5,000 to do that thing and they don't do that thing, you still get your $5,000. You just find somebody else.
Yeah.
You like, if they don't do the thing, it's all on them. And that's why it's a great piece of business.
Contractors and tradespeople, when I got into the business and I was a GC, I didn't research other GCs. I tried to communicate with GCs to get a better understanding. You got to remember, this is 15 years ago.
Yeah.
A better understanding of how to deal with the industry, not how to steal the industry from you.
Right.
Right. I never cared about stealing because I'm a creative individual and I would always walk into a room. And if I wanted to express something creatively, I would come up on the fly something creative. Mm-hmm. I didn't pull it, steal it from somebody else.
Yeah.
You originated and it came to you, and that's what you presented.
Yeah.
So whenever I tried, I remember 15 years ago, I would try to pick the brain of other GCs. Mm-hmm. How do I handle this industry? How do I do this? And it wasn't until I met Jim Carrick that he was an open book and he started sharing a bunch of information that was, I wish I found it 10 years earlier because it would have been so much more valuable for me at that time. Mm-hmm. But everybody at that time didn't want to share. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure that when you started your painting business, it wasn't about stealing what other painters were doing, because mm-hmm. that's not the goal.
Right.
You weren't going to build Fitch Painting from stealing what others have already been doing.
Right.
You were going to start something from scratch and build it the way your gut was telling you how it should be built based on the conversations that you were having with clients and new employees that were coming into the way. And you want to educate these employees. And that's what I've said over and over. A tradesperson is a teacher. It happens. It's a natural progression. It's mm-hmm. always going to happen. You just have to find the right students to share that knowledge to.
Sure.
Simple as that. But it's a great point that you bring up about the coaches is you're getting a lot of people are seeing this is a gold mine.
There's construction
people here. They will listen to me. They'll buy in. And all of a sudden, I will give them my tips, my tricks, and all this other stuff, whether you implement them or not, or whether you grow your business or not. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with me at that point.
Yeah.
And that's the part that I don't like. And I'm seeing a lot of it through digital adoption. So I'm seeing a lot of kids that have come out and they're coming up with apps or they're coming up with digital ideas and they're like, you should be doing this. You should be doing this. And it goes back to your point about there's always something more to do. But you don't necessarily.
There's a bit of an obsession with it. It's just, again, I think that there's going to be people that it will build. I think it's going to have that effect on people. But I think there's also, there is a concern that I have. And I mean, I also don't want to be a dinosaur. I also don't want to say, okay, well, this is the way I did it. And that's the way it should be done.
You got to evolve.
I love the fact that if somebody does submit to coaching, that they can actually, you know, achieve something that's great and everything. But there's this snowball happening that is like learn, do, teach. This is the whole education business. You learn something, you do it once successfully, now you're a teacher.
Yeah.
So, and it doesn't, even if you've only done it once, well, now, you know, now you can teach it, right? So,
because
what's the difference between teaching and sharing? Well, it's probably about how much you charge.
Yeah, basically.
Right? It's about how much you charge for that knowledge and how much you charge for that information. And right. So it's just, I guess for me, that's a concern for me. I spent about 20 years volunteering with young people and teenagers at church. And so I have a real concern for young people to put the appropriate amount of pressure on them so that they can be challenged, mm-hmm. but not this undue level of pressure that's too soon and too much, where you always feel like you're not enough. You always feel like you're being yelled at, right? And so we've got young people now that are listening to David Goggins, that are watching the Joe Rogan show, that are literally being yelled at constantly.
And they're comparing.
They haven't heard, it's been silent over COVID. They've been kind of on their own, and now they're being yelled at, right? You're a warrior, you need to man up. There's a book called Man Up. I mean, like, And I understand, I get it. I understand that. I understand that push to be a Navy SEAL in life. Like, I get that. However, I'm not sure that it's appropriate for people that are already struggling with mental health challenges and anxiety issues and all of that. I think there's going to be a price. It will make somebody, it'll make some heroes, but I think
the majority,
I think there's another part to it that is a little bit imbalanced. Somebody at some point maybe will come out and help us find that balance.
I see. And just for the record, dinosaurs would make really bad painters because of those little small arms that they have.
It's little arms, right? Like, just, like, what are you going to do with those at all?
You can't get it. You can't get into the corner at all.
You have to get so close. You have to do the Karate Kid thing. Wax on, wax off, right?
But so the younger, like, I'm curious, and I encourage anybody who's listening, if you do have young trades working with you, or you're actually on a job site and there's younger trades there, just ask them. Ask them, do you want to be 30 years from now doing what you're doing right now in some capacity?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure all of them are going to say no.
Yeah.
They probably would want to be either teaching it, running a business and just educating people about it, or being on the office admin side of it and then just planning all the jobs. Sure. But I don't think any of them want to be swinging the hammer, for lack of a better term, right? They don't see it. Longevity.
I think it's difficult. I think it's difficult for them to see that path. And that's why my questions to them would be definitely very short term, like 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, maybe. But even then, like, that's very difficult for people anymore because there's just so much uncertainty that, I mean, I've always known that I can paint. So, you know, if everything falls apart and I don't have to climb a ladder because my foot isn't sore, you know, then I can paint. Like, I have this sort of this certainty, this sort of go-to thing. And a lot of us, when we were growing up, we had that because we maybe had a parent that was in the contracting business, or we had a parent that worked at GM. If you lived in St. Catharines, you pretty much knew what you could do for the rest
of your path was already
there.
Paved.
There was a weird kind of peace in that. There's no peace anymore. There's no
direction for this generation.
There's no direction, and there's no, there's this sort of perpetually unsatisfied feeling.
Scott, like, who's, I'm not blaming
I don't know
anybody.
The answer to it.
No,
I
don't, but
I'm really just pointing to
who's,
it.
Who's really, I don't want to put blame or anything like that, but is it the parent that hasn't hinted at some sort of direction, or is it the child, adult, teenager, adolescent, whatever you want to call them, They should be seeking out this direction. Like, when we were growing up in high school, you have no clue, right? You're just like, you're a fish out of water, and you're just trying to figure out how the right and left of limbs work, right? So after high school, you try to get a better clue of what you want to do, what you're good at. You start discovering what your inner talents are. Everybody's got something, right? But then you start gravitating towards that direction. But maybe it doesn't work out for whatever reason. So now something else comes up. There's always another fork in the road, and that's where you should be going. So I don't know if people are paying attention to the clues that are out there. I don't think that they're seeing it because there's so much noise.
Yeah, so I think that's the thing, is that everything is showing up like a clue.
Yeah.
Everything is showing up.
So which way to go?
Everything is showing up like a pathway. Like, the most successful, it seems to young people, like the most successful people didn't finish college, right? You've got the 21-year-old Amazon millionaire, right? Or you've got the, you know, person making six figures doing video game testing, right? So you have all of these new ways of being successful now that people don't, there's just every option looks like a great option because somebody's making it look like a great option.
There's too much comparison.
So you just... And there's so many different ways to earn a living nowadays. When you and I were growing up, there were not nearly as many ways to make a living.
ABC.
Right? Choose. Now, if you ask 10 people, what do you do for a living? they may have to explain it to you because you won't understand it.
Monday, Tuesday, I do this. Wednesday, Thursday, I do that. Well, on the weekends, I do this, right?
That's that. Yeah.
It's not different jobs. It's just different career choices.
Yeah, that's possible too. So there's just, now it's just like everything else. It's like, how many channels are there in TV? We're going to take 2 hours to decide what we're going to watch. And then, oh, we're out of time. We don't have time. Or I'm too tired. I want to go to bed. And all you've done is look at the options. And that's what's happening now, is that you have this analysis paralysis where, you know, there's nothing that's simple there, right? There's nothing that's obvious anymore. And so I think for me, the biggest thing is that all the humans in my life that I care about, I want to make sure that there's always conversation happening. I always want to make sure there's always communication happening so that we can help each other kind of process, you know, these things. And I think that if there's any way, if there's anything people could work on with each other, is learning how to kind of listen and understand, because the world in general is not going to help us. The world in general is not going to, there's no education system. It's those people that care about us the most. So if there's somebody in my life that I care about, then I really want to initiate and be able to know that I can have those conversations about real things, about, you know, desires and all of that stuff. Because I talk to all kinds of people that are my peers that are 50 years old and up.
What's rolling around in their younger heads?
They don't feel like they're enough. They're not enough. I struggle with it. They don't feel like they've done enough. They feel like they should be doing something else. I should be doing this. I know I should be doing this. I should be.
That's comparison.
Right? But I see it at every age. So
you see it worse in the younger age?
It's worse because it makes me feel bad that a 22-year-old person could have such deep-seated regrets.
You don't need to have that at that age.
They have such strong regrets. You know, I should have started investing when I was 17.
Get on a bike, build a makeshift ramp, you know? And jump it. Break a bone or two. live.
I don't know. Again, I think the thing is that I can't paint it with a broad brush, but I hope that person has somebody to talk to.
That's a good point.
I hope that person has somebody to help them, to listen to them, to process them. In a lot of cases, they just don't. And I can't, breaks my heart a little bit, but I can't control that.
You can only offer what you can.
I think those of us who know how important it is, or those of us that can be a listening ear, that's a great opportunity for the world. It's a great opportunity for their world to have somebody in their life to process that. And sometimes maybe to say, well, let's just take the pressure off yourself for a minute. You know, that all these things that you should be doing, somebody else maybe has told you that, right? What is it that you want? What is it you actually want? What do you want your day to look like? What do you want your life to look like? What's next for you in the next 2-3 months? Let's start there, you know? And I don't know how else to approach it, but
I have no idea how we got on this path, but I love that we did.
I have loved all my experiences with young people in the trades. And I loved it when I had my sons working for me and my cousin and my son's best friends. Those were some of the best times when I was training them and, investing in them. And I loved it. And I think they enjoyed it too, for the most part, except for the lecturing.
I've got a couple of kids that are going to be on the show tomorrow.
Yeah.
That work with a waterproofing company, Antonio from Aquastop. And I got to meet them 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And 18-year-olds.
Okay, wow.
In a 5-foot ditch, digging away.
Wow.
In this heat, loving it.
Amazing.
And I'm like, are you guys not tired? No, man, we're good.
Amazing.
And then they're telling me about, yeah, we go out and we party, we socialize, we have fun, and mm-hmm. we go to work and we hustle, we work hard, and we take breaks when we need to take break, we drink water when we need to drink water. Mm. And I'm looking forward to having them on the show and just have pick their brain.
That's all old school right there, minus the drinking water part. I don't think I ever drank water when I was a kid. It was always
hose water. Nobody drinks hose water,
but it was always like Tang or it was like Freshy. Tang. You know, right? Man. Those like crystalline sugar packets that you mix with things. But, you know, the idea of staying hydrated and drinking water, carrying a water bottle around. Can you imagine carrying a water bottle around? No.
No,
it just wasn't like that.
Well, I'm looking forward to talking to those guys and just get a sense of what they love about, because they're doing a hard job. Like, it's not one of the easy ones, right? Not saying that any of them are easy. I'm just saying they're doing a hard one.
Digging
in this heat.
Digging anything is difficult work. Yeah. Anything shovel,
manual labor. When you have to, for the most part, there's some machinery, but you still got to deal with risks. You got to watch out around gas lines and shrubbery and
all. Hardest day of my life was the day I went with a friend to pour a small walkway.
How small are we talking?
Well, I don't know. It was like 6 feet. Okay. It was only 6 feet.
Okay.
And we got to the place too late to get the cement mixer. He's like, oh, we'll mix it in the back of the truck. So he puts a tarp in the back of his truck.
Old school.
Yeah. Puts a tarp in the
redneck
back of the truck.
Redneck old school.
Yeah. Puts a tarp in the back of the truck. Goes, gets the sand, the quickcrete, and the gravel. And he literally mixes for 5 minutes. And he's like, and then I mix for 5 minutes. And I'm like, and it was.
Shovel mixing?
Shovel mixing in the back of the truck with a hose in the water, turning it.
Making a hole in the tarp.
So that we could. Okay. Pour, I don't know how many yards that is, or one or two. I don't know how big it is. I don't understand concrete measurements, but that was the hardest day's work of my life, bar none. It was amazing. So anybody,
the concrete guys love it.
Anybody with a shovel, you know, even raking concrete is not easy. It is hard work, especially when it's hot.
Every gym. Scott at Finch Painting, www.fitchpainting.com, scott@fitchpainting.com, 705-627-4453. Do we want to do the 12 questions again? Have they changed since last time or what?
12 questions. Fire them at me if you want.
No, some of the questions have actually changed.
I didn't fill them.
No. I just fired them at you. What show number was he on? 489? I am pretty sharp then.
That was pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think she mentioned it before we started recording, and then I guess retained it. What is your favorite construction word or phrase?
I think I said this before, jigger.
Jigger, I remember.
Jigger, yeah.
Least favorite tool?
Reciprocating saw.
What do you miss from childhood?
Rock music.
Music sucks today.
Who? What rock band is great right now?
There is
who's the front person?
Anything.
Who's the guitarist?
You know who the front person is? The record executive label taking advantage of all the artists.
Who's the virtuoso guitarist? Who's the virtuoso drummer? Who's the Neil Peart? Who's the Eddie Van Halen?
The good old Metallica, Guns N' Roses,
like, who are they?
And just like
they just don't
Stevie Ray Vaughan. And
yeah, there's no like, country music done. Is the best. Honestly, done. Now it's the best thing we have because at least it tells a story. Rock music used to tell a story.
What construction sound do you love?
Oh, I love the sound of a coffee truck. Like that horn.
They're going to disappear one day.
What's that?
They're going to disappear one day.
Why?
Who's going to continue doing that? You tell me there's a kid today that's going to take over that job?
I don't know.
With Uber and everything, competition-wise? That's going to disappear. Tell me where the last...
There's got to be good money in a
phone booth you ever
saw. They're charging $50 for a pack of smoke, so there's got to be, you know... No, I don't know.
No, I was actually shocked to hear someone tell me it was like $25 for a pack of smokes these days. And I'm like, I'm so glad that I do not smoke.
Oh, yeah. I don't know, but do you remember the coffee trucks where, like, the coffee truck guy would, like, he'd give you credit?
Yeah.
And you pay him at the end of the week when you got paid?
There was a float. He carried it. I get it.
Yeah. But, like I knew guys that were into it for, like, $125,
right? You can't do that today.
In the 90s.
What's a veal sandwich on a coffee truck cost these days?
It's got to be 20 bucks. It's got to be. It was 10 bucks then.
That was the only thing I would eat. I loved those veal sandwiches there, even though they were just really burnt, like, hard, crispy, whatever. Favorite beverage?
Oh, my favorite beverage. Oof. I like Fresca. Big fan of Fresca.
What did you say, like Tahiti Treat or something like that?
Tahiti Treat is great. I love Tahiti Treat. And we'll go back to the 80s with those ones, though.
But RC Cola.
Yeah, Tahiti Treat was great,
though. What turns you on and off in construction?
I think a clean job site turns me on.
Yes.
It's pretty sweet.
Yes.
Walking in, and it's shocking, right?
Not tripping, not walking over.
Yeah. So, because, I mean, I know what it's like to have to paint ceilings, and I kind of use my feet as antenna. You got to drag your feet because you don't want to trip in anything. So you drag your feet to kind of feel yourself around as you were doing that. What
turns you off?
What turns me off? I think just like yelling, like in general, just like people that respond to everything by yelling.
Favorite curse word? You don't swear, do you swear?
Not too much.
You don't have a favorite one?
I'm not sure I have a favorite one.
Favorite vehicle? Any mode of transportation?
Minivan.
Minivan?
I'm sorry.
We going Dodge Caravan?
I love the Dodge Caravan.
Wood paneling or no wood paneling?
I had one. I had a Woody. I had a wood paneled
minivan. That was a go-to, minivan, man.
But my kids, we all called it Woody. Absolutely. I had it.
I remember those.
Yep, I had one. We were two minivan family at one time. We will be again.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
Public speaker.
I can see it. I totally see that. What profession would you not like to do?
Doctor. No, thanks.
I think corruption. I'm sorry, but I do.
I'm thinking more just what they're doing. What their day to day.
Doctors today, in my opinion, it's like, just like a pill is the solution for everything that they offer. And I'm like,
well, that's what they do.
I disagree with you. So there's other ways of healing, helping. Last question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
You gave more than you took.
Scott, man, it's always a pleasure to see you. Thank you so much. Yeah. Come back anytime you want, man.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
It's been a great show. Everybody check you out. Business is good.
Business is good. Yep.
One last question. What's a bold color? What's the boldest color that a client actually greenlit and said, yes, painted, and you painted and put a smile on your face?
And it put a smile on my
face?
Yeah,
you were like, this is a color. I love this color.
I do like the dark one called Iron Mountain. I like that one.
Yeah, like a grayish, bluish or something?
It's not black. It's like dark, 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 dark brown, black.
What finish?
It's nice.
Like what kind of finish?
Matte finish.
Matte.
But matte finish is going to be a little bit shiny.
Is fat or flat? Flat and matte, same thing?
No. Flat has no shine at all.
Satin and eggshell, same thing? But a matte.
No.
No.
It depends on the company and it depends on the paint, right? So Benjamin Moore doesn't have really an interior satin. They have exterior satin and they have exterior low sheen. So it just, everyone is a gradient, but no, flat. Matte has a little bit of shine to it so that it can
flat
be washable.
Flat is dead flat. Theater flat.
Yes.
It won't absorb light.
Yeah, not too much. Although, again, the darker a color is, the more it's going to have a natural shine because of the amount of tint that's in it.
Yeah.
So a matte black, even theater black, so you can actually buy stage black from Seiko.
Yeah.
Right? Stage black.
Love that
It black. Still looks like eggshell, though. Like, it's still shiny.
I know.
It's still very shiny. I painted my gym in that stuff. But it I wish it would be dead flat, but I'm not sure you can make a black that's completely dead flat. You can get ceiling paint from Benjamin Moore. You can get them to tint it. You can get a black in that, but
who's the company that's still doing, or if they're still doing it, the pink that turns white bullshit for the...
That's Dulux.
As Dulux does that?
That's a Dulux product, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What's the point of that? I don't understand. So you remember where you painted?
Yeah, so you can sort of see, you know, and again, like I said, that probably if somebody's trying to do one coat or something, that makes sense.
That's
like,
the reason why.
Yeah, like I don't love using that particular product, but it's not because of the pink. It's just weird painter stuff. It's sort of it balls up on the end of the brush, silly stuff like that. So what do I know? I can't paint. I got a broken. I got a messed up foot.
You're managing these days. That's it.
I am managing. I do sales and marketing and training.
Another month? Hopefully not.
For what?
For your foot to heal.
I hope so. I mean, I hope so. And I don't know if it's just rest or maybe I do have to get the air cast. I'm not sure what I'm going to do, but.
It's almost like you rather have an arm. At least you can walk.
If you would have hurt an arm instead of a leg.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. If something needed to be rested up here, yeah, I could probably figure that out, but you can't, it's hard to.
A foot becomes a challenge on everything.
It becomes a challenge. And I've had it happen before. So I had it happen about 20 years ago. I was playing football and I caught a pass and I came down and landed on that foot. And I did, I had to sit in a chair for 2 weeks straight in order for it to heal. So they basically said the same thing. The doctor said the same thing to me. So,
and all you youngins listening, you guys will not know what the pain is like when you do have a sprain or you damage a foot and your vehicle is stick.
There you go.
Especially if it's the left.
Yeah, there you go.
Because you're doing clutch and brake. It hurts.
Yeah.
Because you got to drive still.
Yeah.
And there's no other option at that point.
For sure.
Which, by the way, I miss stick.
You do?
Totally miss stick. I love stick.
Hate it.
I hate paddles. I can't stand paddles.
I don't know. I hate driving standard.
I love standard.
Yeah, I hate it. Love it. Especially in traffic. Forget
that
it.
I don't like. Oh, no. Come on. Just driving for the sake of driving and then changing gears and up and down.
Maybe shifting. If you have an open road or something like that, but actual every day.
Not downtown. No.
No, downtown. No, thank you.
No. That's it, Scott. We're done. Thank you very much, man.
We made it.
We're out of here, Angelia.